This is the Dr. Touch podcast. Episode 16, Eye of the Volcano. Dr. Touch is waiting to see if he can fly to the US. There's a volcano in the way. At the same time, Apple unleashes hell in their developer agreement, delay the international iPad release, and lightning fast new laptops. iPhone hacker George Hotz has hinted that he found an exploit in the latest 3.2 firmware that will allow a so-called untethered jailbreaks for all iPhones. He claims that this might also allow for a jailbreak for iPad on day one. Bad news for developers who sell apps for a living. Good news for hackers who probably will try to mod their iPads into full Unix devices. For a while, it was generally thought that Fujitsu still was owning the iPad trademark. They were still using it for a Windows CE-based point-of-sales device. When they did not respond for 6 months in 2008, the US Patent and Trademark Office declared it as abandoned. Fujitsu refiled and went into pending. Apple contested the claim beginning last September with two extensions in October and December, while the two companies deliberated the rights. The final resolution now granted Apple all the rights a few weeks before the iPad is scheduled to go on sale. It will forever remain unknown if Apple paid off Fujitsu or if they had simply had a stronger claim. After the recent purge of explicit content, it appears that Apple still plans to make this available, but with appropriate parental controls in place. The explicit category had resurfaced shortly and disappeared right after having been spotted. Now iTunes hackers have found several pages like the free explicit and top free paid showing up in internal links. It could be another resurfacing of the earlier experiment, or it could really be an indication that adult content will return, eventually. But you will have to ask your guardian to enable explicit stuff on your iTunes to see it. Apple seems to have procured all 30,000 public domain books from the Gutenberg project to fill the iBook store on launch. A big portion of ebooks sold as apps on the App Store were such books that are really available for free, but enterprising developers made some money on selling apps with these free books inside. With the iBook store, you will be able to read the classics for free and with the nice interface that the iBooks app provides. The iBooks app will also become available on the iPhone when version 4.0 of the OS will be released this summer. DigiTimes reports that Apple has switched manufacturer for the iPod Touch panels from TPK to WinTech because TPK was not able to provide the capacity that Apple requires to fill the worldwide lust for iPads. This shortage is the most probable reason why it's only been sold in the US as of April 3rd, only 2 per customers and no volume orders for businesses. Hopefully this will allow sales everywhere. Surveys of Apple stores still show that the iPad is in high demand, especially the lower priced models with less memory are flying off the shelves. The release of new MacBook models appears to be imminent. An employee at Microcenter has 4 new SKU numbers hinted at 1 good, 1 better and 2 best models, the price point of which appears to be in line with current MacBook Pros. With 4.0, you can link contacts and will see all the contacts details in one pane. Apparently, 4.0 will no longer support the first iPhone, and iPhone 3G will not get multitasking. With 4.0, if you remove an app, you no longer get asked for a rating. This is also good news because normally people who remove an app do so because they don't like something about it. I assume that we will now see less apps that have lots of 5 stars and lots of 1 star ratings, but nothing in between. Now, if somebody wants to rate, he has to make a conscious effort to do so. Though I still think that Apple should link some sort of social benefit or identity with the reviews, this way the developers could talk back to the often false accusations and people would think more before writing something that could come back to them. Evidence mounts that iChat will come to the iPhone. Already there is an iChat daemon running on the 4.0 beta, And now iPhoneHacks.it has discovered iChat sounds amongst the system files inside a folder aptly named conference.framework. Apple has changed section 331 of the developer agreement to basically prohibit usage of all Meta platforms. They want iPhone apps to be written only in Objective-C. While being a problem for many people who have been hoping for tools like Flash to be providing a way around learning this language, it's actually wonderful news for us who specialize in CocoaTouch. Companies who want to play on our platform in the future will have to go through us. John Gruber of Daring Fireball shows that this is actually in Apple's best interest not to permit the establishment of a Meta platform on top of CocoaTouch. Much to the positive surprise of developers worldwide, Apple's review team led through Opera Mini. This browser uses Opera servers to compress websites and thus speed up web traffic over cellular connections. Opera Mini is now available on the App Store. Apple Insider has the first review. It's fast, but rendering is not as nice as on Safari and has some display problems. For us developers, it's interesting to see that if you try to make your app sufficiently different than built-in functionality, then Apple will approve it. AppsFire has announced the winners of the second unreleased apps competition at 360 IDEF conference. A game called The Jim and Frank Mysteries Blood River Files was the runner-up in the games category. The game looked very much like the popular Professor Layton titles on the DS, with adventure-style story scenes in between, touch-controlled Marv and logic puzzles. The winner of the games category is a title named IsoCards for the iPad, which seems similar in functionality to Game Table, with a touchable deck of cards that can be manipulated into whatever game you want. A few nice touches on that one include an iPhone connection that allows for secret card hands, and even on iPad feature where you can cup your hand on the touch surface and the iPad will flip up cards that only you can see. In the utility category, the runner-up was iMockups, an iPad app that allows you to quickly and easily create mockups for iPad and iPhone apps, web pages, or any number of other different UIs and interfaces. The category's winner was Lifecycle, which uses a wireless module hooked up to the iPhone and attached to a bicycle to track files of speed, distance, and so on during bike rides. And in the entertainment and fun category, AppsFire showed off Pocket Zoo, an educational app that lets children and others learn about and observe, via live webcams, zoo animals from all over the world. The winner of the entertainment and fun category was Mixer, a good-looking DJ app for iPad with touch-based turntables, lots of different audio controls, and a nice techno aesthetic. Apple sparked a new controversy with the contents of Section 339 of the developer agreement, which in short bans third-party analytics software from iPhone apps. More precisely, it prohibits the use of software in your iPhone apps that collects information on iPhones like device ID, model, and OS version. Several companies like AdMob and Flurry would be using this data to analyze adoption rates of certain OS versions and models. Flurry is seeking direct clarification from Apple. AdMob, which is now owned by Google, has yet to react. Apple really does sell more iPads than they can produce. This prompted them to make the unpopular decision to delay the international launch by 1 month. Apparently, they plan to make the Wi-Fi and 3G models available by the same time, by the end of May. Although it's still unclear whether international really means worldwide, or if they will stick with the few non-US countries they previously announced it for. And finally, long overdue, Apple has released updates to the MacBooks. You can now get up to 4 cores at the higher end and graphics that switch dynamically between built-in Intel and discrete Nvidia for performance. Especially noteworthy is the extremely long battery duration of over 8 hours. So that's it for the news. Today I've got a special guest. He's been a long friend of mine by the name of Mike Vallée. You might know him from his blog and podcasts, crazymikesapps.com. Mike teamed up with Brian Baus and they made a ebook about the secrets of effective iPhone app marketing. Now, Mike has been doing Crazy Mike apps for over a year. Let me give you a bit of background. He told me he's got a day job at USIS, and for them, he's basically doing social media marketing. And his second job and his nighttime passion is to review apps. Blogging about his reviews, he's making videos, he's podcasting, and his podcast even gets syndicated, has about 20,000 downloads every month. And that's where he gets his experience from, because he sees people market their apps and he sees what works and what does not work. And his teammate, who he teamed up with to make this book, is Brian Baus from iproduceapps.com. They got together because Brian originally got kind of a product from Mike to promote some of his apps, and they got talking and it kind of clicked. So that's where he basically brought to the table his MBA and business skills, and Mike had his social media and marketing skills, and was kind of a match made in heaven, wasn't it, Mike?
Yes, it was a very good match.
So you said it basically was your idea to make the ebook. So from the idea to actually making it, was that a long process? Tell us a bit about how this ebook came to be made.
So every time I review an app, I always look at the app and I always think about what can make an app better. And when I look at that, I wish I could call every developer up and give them, you know, 5 minutes of my opinion on how the app could be better. And I know that, you know, it doesn't always work like that. Sometimes you rush to put it to market, and I get it. But that spurred me to, you know, study apps, and I spend way too much time in the iTunes App Store watching apps, downloading apps. I've got, you know, 12, 13 screens of apps on my phone every day. And basically I thought, well, I've seen the successes of some of the development outfits, some of the development companies, and I decided that I wanted to write an ebook and chronicle some of their success and also provide some tips on how to help developers be more successful from my standpoint, which is I have a little bit of a technical background, as you know, Oliver, or Dr. Touch. When I met you through the Apple forum a little over a year ago to help me learn how to code for the iPhone. So, but I also have an end user's consumption. So I get how it needs to be on the user's end. And that's really, Brian came in, and when he came in, Brian's he wants to put plans into action very quickly. And where the ebook was going to happen later on, it happened much quicker by the two of us working together. So, you know, could it have, well, and that's pretty much, that's how we got to where we are now.
It's like, you are the geeky researcher in his laboratory, and he's the business guy with the whip.
Yeah, but he also has the geeky researcher because he actually is a more proficient coder than I am. He's got the business skills to help propel things forward. He's got more discipline than Crazy Mike has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, your name says it. You're crazy, and he's the business guy. Now, how did you split the work? Who did you choose certain chapters, and everyone did what he's best at, or how did you split the workload?
It's really funny. We didn't. You know, this is going to sound weird, and where he's meticulous, or you would think he would be meticulous on having a meeting. You know, I work for a corporation, and there's meetings about everything. But we actually talked a few times, and I took on social media, marketing intelligence, and the case studies, and he took on some of the things that he's more proficient with, which is, you know, the iTunes description, pricing, launching your app, and the PR stuff from the press releases, that because he's done those things. So what we did together, though, just kind of dovetailed into each other's. So, you know, it worked out well. There was no fighting or bickering.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds like harmony at first glance. Yeah, better than most of the relationships where you would have to kind of see that you get over the critical days like Valentine's Day or so.
Right.
You've prepared a little bit of a goodie for my listeners, so that people can see there's really really useful stuff in this ebook. You said you're going to talk on user interface design.
Yeah. In my opinion, the user interface it is the most important part of an iPhone app. Because if you can have all the best information in your app, all the best functionality, all the best servers, and all the greatest stuff, but if a user can't easily access it or use it, you may as well not even submit the app to the iTunes App Store. So that, you know, and I get this because I've reviewed thousands of apps, and I've not done written reviews or actually publicized all of them because some of them don't even make it to a review. After a few minutes, I get frustrated and the app gets deleted off my phone. A couple of things, and this is going to be one of the biggest fear foes of every developer, should be that you send an app to market that crashes. It's just, people pay for something, and even in a free app, people want, you know, expect, even even out of a free app, people expect performance. And if your app crashes, that is the fastest way to get your app a black eye and to get no sales and to get very negative reviews in the iTunes App Store. And people do read those reviews. Now, some ways that I see some things that I see on a crash isn't always going to be the developer's fault. There could be a user issue and that they didn't load the app right, or they loaded something else wrong, and they need to reboot their phone or delete the app and reinstall it. That's the first thing, you know, that I do as a user. And that could be something that would be, should be, you know, in all developers' minds, so that they're not all getting a black eye. But a couple of things that I suggest for developers is they need to figure out what the experience they want the user to have and how they want them to have it. You know, numbers of buttons, you know, where the buttons should be. They need to also figure out the colors and where are the screens going to take you. And developers don't always have the best, they're not always the best ones to figure this out for their app, I'll have to tell you, because they're more analytical and they're more technical. A lot of times I would suggest for developers to refer to maybe do a group of, you know, a question group, you know, and do some marketing research to find out from, you know, maybe college iPhone users, or go into a forum, or even start just a random, you know, if you have a blog or if you're on Twitter, and try to get some feedback from just a regular user on, you know, what they like to see maybe in your type of app that you're developing, you know, so use a user group to try to figure out what, you know, and the user group could be as simple as family members that aren't developers.
Would you recommend or disrecommend that if I have like a couple of beta testers to employ these, do you think these are great for doing that? Or is it that the danger is they are too technical minded as well and would probably not be able to tell you if there are any kind of experience problems because they are so focused on technical things? What's your opinion there?
Yeah, it's good. But again, I mean, instead of choosing people you know, in that case, you may want to go with people you don't know so well, because you're right. You know, I've heard before, developers gave the ad hoc to somebody. that was friendly with them. And all that happened is they didn't get any negative advice. And they walked into a store, you know, the app store, sold their app, and, you know, they didn't get very well because it really did have some limitations. So, but yes, beta testers, user group, you know, I'm a big fan of getting it right before you put the app into a market. So, you know, I would suggest trying to figure out the user interface. Is it smooth? Is the navigation clear? Is the app do what you say it's going to do? Do you have helpful instructions to explain that are easily identifiable? Those are the things that are very important for me going into an app. If I get confused, where can I go? Does it work? Does it freeze up? You know, is it going to satisfy me with information? So, you know, creating a good user interface, A number one, make sure it doesn't crash. Use others that, you know, beta testers or user groups, you know, that would be easy to assemble, you know, without having to do too much work to get some free feedback, you know, on how or what, you know, if you're making an app on recipes, you know, go ask some people, you know, maybe try to find some mothers that use iPhones and see what they want to, you know, ask them who better, you know?
Well, what do you think about the approach of just kind of getting the basic feature set done and just releasing 1.0 and giving people an opportunity to talk back to you, maybe with an in-app email form, and then go from there and just kind of shortcut so that your users are basically your beta tester. And if somebody says, well, this button here, I don't like that, and then go and change it. Or is that a totally wrong approach?
No, that's excellent. You know, that's the right approach. And that's discussed in a couple of the case studies in this book. So I give you another freebie there. Just kidding. A little sneak there. Community and listening to your customer is the absolute number one thing to do. And a lot of the big companies that have done extremely well, or I should say the indie companies that have done extremely well, have done just that. They listen to the customer, they respond to what the customer says. And I'll give you an example. There's a couple times that I don't delete an app off my phone when I like the app. If the app breaks, I had an app called the Analytics app, and I use it for Google Analytics to see what's happened on my blogs. The app broke. It was useless, but the developer put a message on his board on the description in iTunes saying, hey, I know it's broken. I apologize. Something happened with Google, and I'm fixing it. It took about 2 weeks, but he got it fixed, and I didn't take the app off. I know that's weird, but it's about listening to the consumer and communicating with them. But I absolutely think that's the right way to go. And you're right. If you only want to do, maybe you plan to do more, but you want to get your app to market, I highly suggest that you don't stretch yourself and make the app where it might be worse than it would be if you just waited and did some, like you say, you know, let your users guide you down the road. Because sometimes they'll think of stuff you never thought of as a developer.
So another idea, how about making this version 1.0 not so pretty, but kind of just the basics done and not spending much time on design and stuff, just to get the features out. Version 1.0 could then even be free, so that you get a couple of hundred downloads per day and kind of recruit your updates for 1.1, which will then be the paid version out of that. Is that approach that you would subscribe to?
With a caveat, I would caution just to be careful not to to put something that's substandard or that is maybe, you know, maybe you say, well, it's not sexy, but I'm going to put it out anyways just to see if anybody bites. I mean, that is, you know, one way. And, you know, I've heard of people putting stuff for sale that they don't have that they don't have yet on eBay. And then when they get bites, they get it. But That's obviously not the same because you have to have something here. But what I'm getting at is, you know, to sacrifice time and effort to get an app up, sometimes it may be the right thing. I think it depends on the app. If you put a game up that's limited, you're probably not going to, you know, it's just not going to work out that well. It depends. I think it all depends on what the app is and what functionality you're looking to provide.
Well, what I'm gaining at is actually there's this a point when you launch an app where it's decided whether the app actually becomes visible to the whole world or whether it quickly disappears out of the new apps area. So,
right.
What I wanted to kind of get from you is whether you think it's more important to keep an ongoing improvement process in your app, or whether it's more important to kind of polish the app to shininess to make the most you can while the app is visible, and then hopefully Apple picks it up and features it, and then you are made for life. So what would be the better approach? And also bear in mind that most developers are not small business, even they are garage developers and are by themselves or maybe have a second guy helping out. So which approach would you recommend to those small guys?
For the small guy, I think it's going to be a combination, and I think it's going to depend on the app. But here, I'm not trying to evade your question. So I would suggest if it's going to be an app that they're pretty sure is going to do well. In other words, it's not a copy of another app as far as like a stick app or game app. You know what I mean? Something like that where you may want to polish it and spend more time, but also employ the part with community to let them guide where the app goes. So you may want to hold off on doing, you know, phase two and phase three, just do phase one because your budget, because your time, but plan on doing phase two before you submit it with, you know, maybe the idea of getting feedback. And I think that there's nothing also, there could be times though, where you have an app with a simpler function that you may want to just put in not as pretty, depending on if it has competition. If it doesn't have competition, then, you know, there's nothing to compare it to. So you have a more likelihood of getting better downloads. Like you mentioned earlier when we were offline, Oliver, there's a lot more that needs to go into this book. We wanted to get this out to share with folks now, but there is quite a bit left for us to do.
So the book is version 1.0 as well.
Yes, version. Yeah, see? So I'm not even living by my own, you know, I'm living by sort of my own thing. And it's really a classic example, but this is an offline, you know, an offline analogy. But yes, that we've had really a lot of good feedback from people who have no knowledge of marketing their iPhone app. Mm-hmm. To the point where I have a lady that named her app. I don't want to embarrass her. I have a lady that named her app something really obscure that had nothing to do with children's apps, but more with travel. And she wasn't getting a lot of downloads. So
we wonder why.
Yes, my opinion is change it to, you know, include some, you know, children's keywords or education in the keyword, you know, those words, children, education, learning, include those in your title because, you know, that's how you get found in iTunes. And iTunes has a search function. So,
but isn't iTunes only searching the keywords?
No, it's that's one nugget that maybe your users did not know. But they in the title search is the most important search right now for iTunes. So anybody listening to this, you can try it. Go pick an app that has, and you'll see some apps that have really long titles. And I used to not like those apps because they're hard for me to fit in my blog posts.
Yeah.
But what happened was I got talking with a PR guy, and he mentioned to me and he explained to me, and I actually put what he said to test, and I started to find Saint App was called, the cookbook recipe app for housewives and daughters. You can find that under housewives, daughters, and you can find it like three different ways because it's like cookbooks and wives. I mean, it's so that if you just name your app, if your app's about cookbooks and you name it, bacon, that's the only way people are going to find your app. So it's what I'm saying is, you can use some keywords in your title and it's very wise to do so. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't make your title sound, really idiotic or silly, but try to come up with a smooth flow of what your title is, even if it's a specific title that you like, but throw a couple keywords in it after a dash.
Well, and the app title doesn't have to be the iTunes title, right? You can have the app title as something short that will display well on the springboard.
Sure.
But you can then have like small title dash the most wonderful for wife and daughters and recipes and eating and first hunger and then not, for example.
That's you're right. And that's true. And that also drives me crazy because sometimes I'll look at the icon and I can't figure out what app it is because it doesn't match up in iTunes. But that's for bloggers to worry about, not consumers so much. Mm. The title is extremely important. Very, very important.
So I've grilled you now over 20 minutes. So we get to the conclusion. The rest of the nuggets and information to get it, people have to purchase the ebook.
Yes.
So can you please quickly tell us where to get it? How much is it?
The ebook is located at the URL. www.iproduceapps.com.
Yeah, that's Brian's website. We can mention that as well. Brian's website is iproduceapps.com, but the URL that you are referring to really is,
sorry, it's iPhone app. It's www.iPhoneAppMarketingEbook.com. Very easy to remember. iPhoneAppMarketingEbook.com. It is $17.95. It's pretty reasonable. It is a little on the smaller side, but it's packed with information that I believe and Brian believes is very helpful, for people who have little to no experience. Even people who have some apps in the store, but may not be seeing the full, sales, There's a lot of tips in here on how to get more exposure on your app.
And there's several free bonuses that come with it, right?
Yeah, there's some case studies and there's a list of review websites to get your to request reviews from that are consolidated into a list. And there's more to come. We're not stopping here. We're gonna be doing some real world testing with our own apps. We're producing some apps. Mm-hmm. So we will be back with a more in-depth book that will there's also iPad apps coming out and the iTunes App Store is sure to get an overhaul. So we'll be looking to see what that does because every time that happens, things change, right?
Well, just today, I've seen, maybe you've seen it, not even yet. If you log into iTunes and try to download a new app, you get a new terms and conditions that mentions that there's going to be a possibility of gifting apps, which is something new because until now you've only been able to gift music. But that's we've seen that internationally. I've seen that in Austria and Germany. Somebody told me it's in Italy, in France, even in Canada. So that's probably something that Apple is introducing tomorrow or the day after tomorrow. And that's one of the things that big changes because suddenly if you like an app, you can gift it to somebody else.
Yeah, it's actually while we're talking, I just did a purchase and I have to agree to the changes are the gifts and new gifts.
The key sentence is it there's a news information about the conditions under which apps can be gifted. So it mentions a couple of things that you can't do. You can't gift in-app purchases, and you can't gift a couple of things. But it sounds like it's very likely that these are just the exceptions, and you will be able to generally gift apps because of that. But that's another story. That's beside the point for this ebook.
That's going to cause a fury of sales, though.
I'm hoping so. Yeah. So.
Oh, big time.
So, Mike, thanks for being with me. Thanks for giving us a little bit of insight what people could expect from getting this book. I recommend it that people who are getting started in the iTunes business just get it. It's not that much. You can pay it on PayPal and have a read in one night, and then suddenly you are from total noob up to intermediate marketing expert on iPhone apps, and you have a much smoother start than people like myself had in the beginning of the App Store, because nobody would tell me all of these things. And you, Mike, did a great job at compiling it all together in a concise ebook report. So
thank you
for being with me.
Thanks, Oliver, for having me.
I'll see you all on the other side of the volcano.